EcoReport is a weekly public affairs program
providing independent media coverage
of environmental and ecological studies
with a focus on local, state, and regional people, issues, and events
in order to foster open discussion
of human relationships with nature and the earth
and to encourage you to take personal responsibility for living sustainably in the world.
EcoReport is produced by an independent team of volunteers
working at the studios of Community Radio WFHB in Bloomington, Indiana.
And financially supported by listeners like you.
Good morning and welcome to EcoReport. For WFHB, I'm Juliana Daly.
And I'm Wes Martin. A group calling itself the Night Owls, Paint and Exteriors, or NOPE, spray-painted hundreds of trees in Yellowwood State Forest over the weekend in an attempt to thwart logging efforts. On Thursday, a bid to selectively log 299 acres of state forest was awarded to Hamilton Logging Company. An anonymously published article in the online Earth First Journal, written by NOPE, stated that they spray-painted hundreds of trees with markings identical to those of the Department of Natural Resources. The group stated, quote, "We did this to obscure the trees Hamilton Logging bought and to force the DNR's Division of Forestry to redo the work of marking these tracts, thus delaying when logging can start," unquote. Hundreds of protesters turned up during last Thursday's bidding process, including members of the Indiana Forest Alliance, who were behind the Save Yellowwood encampment. Indiana Forest Alliance Development Director Paul Bryan says the alliance sees the spray painting of the trees as counterproductive, particularly as the Forest Alliance attempts to garner support in the governor's office to stop the logging.
We are trying to go through all different channels, but legitimately building public support for our position, and we don't condone any type of action where they actually go out and deface the trees or do something that it sounds illegal.
Bryan says the Forest Alliance is encouraging residents across the state to contact their legislators and voice their opposition to the Yellowwood logging.
The statement from the Night Owls continues to say, quote, "Logging all currently marked trees would be a violation of the contract between the two parties, which only includes the trees the DNR chose to mark, not the hundreds more we marked with identical paint and markings. We hope that by painting these additional trees, we can stop them from taking any of them, or at least slow them down," unquote. The article encourages others to spray paint trees with similar markings around Yellowwood. WFHB could not verify whether logging the newly marked trees would violate Hamilton Logging's contract with the Department of Natural Resources.
The U.S. Department of the Interior is fining Hamilton County for violating a federal law protecting Native American gravesites. The fine of over $6,000 against the Hamilton County Parks Department alleges that over 90,000 artifacts were unearthed at the Strawtown Katiwi Park near Noblesville. The Associated Press reports 200 human bone and teeth samples were unearthed there between 2001 and 2011. Hamilton County Parks Director Al Patterson says the department is cooperating with federal officials.
The Hoosier Environmental Council will hold its 10th annual Greening the Statehouse Forum next month. Greening the Statehouse is the state's largest environmental event, featuring seminars and guest speakers in conservation and energy sustainability. This year's lineup includes events such as how to organize in your community, how to engage with lawmakers, and how to communicate with media. The event features Reverend Mitch Helcox as its keynote speaker. Helcox spent his early career working in the fossil fuel industry, serves as the head of the Evangelical Environmental Network. Helcox is known for being one of America's leading conservative advocates for environmental issues. Greening the Statehouse will take place at the Hendricks County Fairground on December 2nd.
On October 30th, 84 members of Congress sent a letter to Attorney General Jeff Sessions demanding that environmental activists who sabotage oil and gas pipelines be treated like domestic terrorists. The letter asks Sessions if he has enough power to treat pipeline sabotage as not only criminal but terrorist activity, and encourages him to treat interference with pipeline systems as an assault on U.S. national security. The letter also defines pipeline terrorism as any act that knowingly damages oil or gas infrastructure. If adopted, such a broad definition could permit prosecutors to treat people who chain themselves to pipelines or construction equipment involved in pipeline projects as terrorists. The letter's stated motivation is a series of pipeline cutting actions by environmentalists in 2016. However, its language includes even the nonviolent tactics used by the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe and its allies in resistance to the Dakota Access Pipeline.
Denver is going green at the top. The city just passed an ordinance that requires new construction of large buildings to incorporate green roofs or solar panels. By doing so, Denver joins an expanding list of cities requiring use of the roof space to help with environmental concerns. San Francisco, New York, London, and Paris already have similar requirements. A green roof or living roof is defined as a roof of a building that is partially or completely covered with vegetation and a growing medium planted over a waterproofing membrane. One stimulus for this green roof limitation is the high ozone levels in Denver. The Denver Green Roof Initiative stated on its campaign website that, quote, "These required building improvements would significantly reduce long-term operating costs by lowering energy consumption and increasing the longevity of a roof. A green roof lasts 2 to 3 times as long as a traditional roof because it protects the underlying structure," end quote.
The Denver Green Roof Initiative admits that green roofs cost about $15 more per square foot than traditional roofing, but pointed out that the green roof will pay for itself in about 6 years. Even though the extra cost would be offset in as soon as 6 years, most developers choose not to incorporate them, as they sell developments immediately after construction. Germany, the world's fourth largest economy, is in the midst of a clean energy revolution known as Energiewende. In addition to paying monthly electricity costs, Germans pay an additional fee of $23 to build the new infrastructure. Power prices are high in Germany, where it costs 34 cents per kilowatt hour. By comparison, residential prices for electricity averages 13 cents per kilowatt hour in the U.S.
However, it appears that the overwhelming majority of Germans do not mind paying this extra amount to go green. A survey by the Agency for Renewable Energies, or AEE, revealed that 95% of Germans rate the expansion of renewables as important to extremely important for energy security and to fight global climate change. AEE Deputy Managing Director Niels Bochnick said, quote, "The survey results show the breadth of the societal consensus supporting the Energiewende in Germany. People in Germany know the deployment must continue, so we can fulfill obligations to future generations and to the Paris Agreement," end quote.
A prospective study led by researchers at the University of Toronto School of Public Health linked higher fluoride levels in pregnant women to lower IQs in their children. Previous evidence suggests that the chemical fluoride might be toxic to children's nervous systems. Fluoride is routinely added to drinking water in the U.S. to promote dental health. The study found that each 0.5 parts per million increase in a pregnant woman's urine fluoride levels reduced her child's IQ by 2.5 to 3 points. A child of a woman drinking 1 part per million of fluoridated water, close to the U.S. standard of 0.7 parts per million, would be expected to have a drop of 5 to 6 IQ points as compared to a child of a woman drinking water with close to or no fluoride in it. For WFHB, I'm Juliana Daly.
And I'm Wes Martin. We love to hear from our listeners. Contact us about stories we've aired or if you have ideas for future stories, please send emails to earth@wfhb.org.
On Thursday, the Indiana Department of Natural Resources awarded the logging rights to 299 acres of Yellowwood State Park to Hamilton Logging Company. The sale of old-growth forest came despite hundreds of protesters opposing the sale and higher offers from independent businesses to purchase the land in order to preserve it. WFHB News Director Wes Martin speaks with Indiana Forest Alliance volunteer Dave Seastrom, who took part in the protest in today's Eco Report feature.
Mr. Seastrom, could we start off with you saying your position with the Indiana Forest Alliance?
I'm a volunteer.
And were you present over this past week when the logging bids came in? It's my understanding that there was quite a protest outside of Yellowwood. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, it was actually a pretty big event. In the past, there have been other logging protests at the same venue, but 10 to maybe a dozen people would show up. And what's happened now is because of the way they've changed logging, dramatically increased the rate how they're doing. It's evident to a lot of people that they're turning our wild state forests into industrial tree farms. And so there were some 250 people. That's an estimate. We don't actually know the hard numbers. And we're not talking about young hippies and animal costumes. We're talking about mature adults who come from a wide variety of backgrounds who are all deeply concerned.
And it's my understanding that there was a bid put forward for $150,000 that the state rejected because they didn't have a license to bid on timber sales in the state. The state ended up taking that bid for $108,000. And I was wondering, do you have an opinion as to that?
It was a flooring manufacturer from southern Indiana that offered that bid. And that bid was $150,000 to lease those 300 acres for the next 100 years to preserve it. And he was turned down because the DNR, first of all, they want you to manage the property. So if you win a bid and you have 18 months to log, if you do not complete the logging, they resell the timber 18 months later. So that's already been tried in the past. But this is different. This is a private concern, and his whole issue is, as a wood product manufacturer, he can't even buy Indiana timber. It's all going to China. It's being shipped to China in shipping containers in whole logs. So it comes back to the United States as a finished product, and all those jobs are lost. Now, that was a legitimate offer, and they turned it down out of hand because it didn't qualify in their management practices, and also the technicality that he was not a licensed timber buyer.
So if I can ask, what comes next for the Forest Alliance?
We are developing a strategy where we are canvassing in Indianapolis, in Brown County. We're knocking on people's doors. We're informing them. The amount of support that we're getting is overwhelming. We're asking people to put, we've just printed up another 1,000 yard signs that ask people to call the governor and halt this timber sale, which he can do. And basically, we're just going to hammer contacting your representatives and the governor and ask them to halt this sale. Now, one of the things about this backcountry that's really relevant to the whole story is the fact that the backcountry itself, which was set aside by Governor Orr in 1981 as a preserve with very limited logging, okay, it was understood that this is a pristine special area that needs to go in perpetuity for all Hoosiers to enjoy. It represents 1.7% of all of the state forests. So we have 13 state forests, and this is just 1.7%, but it represents 50% of the old growth in all of the state forests. So this is a premium area. I mean, this isn't just some patch in the woods somewhere. This is an area that's really special. And it was recognized, like I say, by not only Bob Orr, but also Doc Bowen. he became governor later. The other thing is that the IFA has been involved in a four-year study called the EcoBlitz, in which scientists from all over the Midwest who are experts in their field have been doing a baseline study of an inventory of all living things in the forest. So to target one of our study areas, now, mind you now, we pull permits for each and every study, so the DNR is fully aware of all of this. But to target this area, and especially right in the heart of our study, it's vindictive. It's the DNR, it's Jack Seifert, the head of the Department of Forestry, flexing his muscles. So part of the emphasis is to make it known that this is just a very special area and that the DNR is doing this for reasons other than forest management.
And what were some of the results of that EcoBlitz study?
The identification of almost 4,000 plant and animal species, including several rare and endangered, like the pygmy shrew. It's one of the smallest mammals on the planet. It's about the size of a bumblebee. And it takes a mature, undisturbed forest to have an environment that it can survive in. And they found pygmy shrews, they found smoky shrews, they found cerulean warblers, Indiana bats, rattlesnakes. All these creatures are either on the federally endangered species list or they're on the protected list in Indiana. And all of these creatures either demand an undisturbed forest or highly benefit from being in an undisturbed forest. The other thing is, the way the DNR is logging now is it's highly mechanized. So they come in with these giant machines called feller bunchers and giant skidding machines. And these things have enormous tires and they churn up the forest floor, which totally degrades the plant life and the mycelium that exists in the forest floor. And doing so, these machines arrive covered in mud from the previous tract and they are spreading invasive Japanese stilt grass. And once Japanese stilt grass makes its way into a forest area, it's almost impossible to control, and it completely dominates all the other plants, wiping out the native plant species.
You had mentioned that the Forest Alliance is encouraging people to call the governor's office. When does that need to be completed by? When are you expecting to hear anything from the governor's office?
Well, that's a good question. He was interviewed on Channel 6 News two nights before the timber sale last Thursday. And his statement at that time was that nothing has been decided. Now, even if the timber buyer ends up fulfilling his end of the contract, and he had 14 days from the day of the sale to pay his money, and theoretically at that point he could then begin the process of logging. But up until the moment that they begin logging, the governor can always reverse the process and return the money to this timber buyer. So we're urging people to continue to call until Governor Holcomb makes a decision on this. And then if the sale goes through, our mission is to continue to work for legislation to protect at least 10% of our state forests, which frankly is in the mandate of the Department of Natural Resources, and they have chosen not to follow it. And then just one little point about Hamilton Logging Company. This is a company that's pretty well known in Brown County because they've been involved in a couple of legal actions about 7 years ago. They were charged with felony theft and not following best management practices. That case was active for 2 years, and eventually the then prosecutor, Jim Oliver, then dropped the charges because he couldn't prove intent. But then a property owner hired Hamilton Logging to log her property, and they tore it up so egregiously that she won a $75,000 settlement in court. Because they did, their amount of remediation was reduced to $55,000. So the very people who have been charged with doing this logging in this most special area have a checkered past, and that's a matter of deep concern.
Dave Seastrom with the Indiana Forest Alliance as a volunteer, thank you very much for speaking with us.
Well, thank you very much.
Are you an environmental activist, an expert on a particular issue of environmental concern, or a concerned citizen interested in learning more about local and national environmental issues? EcoReport is seeking volunteer reporters to contribute short headline news stories as well as feature interviews. We provide all the technical training you'll need. For more information, email us at earth@wfhb.org or just call 812-323-1200.
And it's time now for Get Out and Hike, our newest segment, showcasing the wonderful wild areas of southern Indiana and beyond.
This is Get Out and Hike, and my name is Jan Walker.
My name is Abby Henkel, and I'm the Communications Director at Sycamore Land Trust. The trail I'm talking about is the Laura Hare Nature Preserve at Downey Hill. It's a property in Brown County, and it's about 600 acres. The trail, I'm really excited about it because we recently completed building a six-mile loop on this property. This was with the Hoosier Hikers Council, which is a fantastic volunteer group that does a lot of trail building in the area. And they worked hard on this for a long time to create this trail. So now it loops around the entire property, and it's 6 miles in total, but you don't have to hike all 6 miles.
How difficult is this trail?
I would say this trail is moderately difficult. It's pretty hilly, but it's steady too. So there's not, you know, lots of rocks to climb over and things like that. But it's not a flat hike, so be prepared for a little bit of exercise when you go. And if you do all 6 miles, obviously that's a pretty long excursion.
Are there any noteworthy features that we will be seeing on this trail?
Well, in general, the beautiful fall colors of Brown County stand out everywhere on this trail. Any season that you're there, it's going to be beautiful. There's a seasonal creek running through it, as there is in a lot of Indiana properties. And there's also something really cool called a glacier erratic, which is a special kind of rock that was dropped by glaciers. And of course, those of us who have been in Indiana long enough know that the glacier traveled through northern Indiana and stopped right about here. So it dropped this stone, and you don't find a lot of these south of here because the glacier stopped. So it's a big stone. You might not notice how cool it is if you didn't know it ahead of time, but as you're walking along, it's hard to miss once you're there.
How will people be able to find this preserve?
So this preserve is in Brown County, and the easiest way to find directions is just to go to our website, sycamorelandtrust.org. From there, you can find information on all of our properties, and there's a page dedicated to this nature preserve. And just simply go to the Downey Hill page, and you can find directions there.
Thank you. About Sycamore Land Trust, do you folks ever need volunteers to come out and help with your properties?
We love to have volunteers. We have something called Third Thursday Preserve a Preserve Day. So once a month, generally on the third Thursday, a team of volunteers, new people and people who have been coming for a long time, go out with our staff to do all kinds of projects. And all of these help us take care of the land better. So it could be pulling invasive species, planting native species, working on trails, repairing trails to create more access. So yeah, volunteers are always welcome. And all of that information is on our website.
Are there any other ways that the general public can support Sycamore Land Trust?
Well, all of our work is supported by our members. So if people want to help with that, they can go to sycamorelandtrust.org and donate to become a member. And that comes with some special benefits that are listed on the website.
All right. Thank you very much.
And now for our weekly community events calendar. The Monroe County Alternative Transportation and Greenways System Network is hosting a public involvement meeting Thursday, November the 16th, today at 5:30 p.m. at the Showers Building, Room 100B, 501 North Morton Street in Bloomington. The network seeks comments related to bicycling and pedestrian concerns. Comments can also be sent to Jordan Yankee at jyanke@co.monroe.in.gov or called in to 812-349-2560.
The Sassafras Audubon Society will host their Ducks and Donuts Birdwalk on Saturday at the Stillwater Marsh Overlook at State Road 46 east of Bloomington, from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. Coffee and donuts will be served while you watch for birds. Wear comfortable shoes and dress accordingly.
take an inside look at the life of a baby bluebird at Springmill State Park on Saturday, November the 18th, from 10 to 11 a.m. Have you ever seen a bluebird take its first flight? How would its siblings react? Meet an ornithologist and view videos from inside a bluebird birdhouse. Meet in the Elm Room at the inn.
On Saturday, November 18th, McCormick's Creek State Park will have a hike to the fire tower from 3 to 4 p.m. You have the opportunity to climb the fire tower and learn about McCormick's Creek's fire ecology. Meet at the Canyon Inn.
Join the naturalist for a guided hike of Devil's Backbone at Charlestown State Park on Sunday, November the 19th, from 1 to 4 p.m. The Devil's Backbone is a limestone outcropping full of history and folklore. Access to the backbone is limited only to guided tours. Register at the DNR website. Meet at the Trail 3 and 4 parking lot.
And that wraps up our show for this week. Eco Report is brought to you in part by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003. And on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
This week's news stories were written by Norm Holy, Linda Green, and Wes Martin. Wes Martin produced our feature. Rebecca Mueller and Andrew Brown edited the script. I compiled our events calendar. Our engineer is Kirsten Payton. Producer is Rebecca Mueller. Executive producer is Wes Martin. For WFHB, I'm Juliana Daly.
And I'm Wes Martin. Join us on Thursdays at 11:30 a.m. before Democracy Now! And on Fridays at 5 p.m. before Kiteline for our weekly radio rundown of ecological news. You can access headline news and feature audio from our shows at any time on the web at wfhb.org.
You've been listening to the Eco Report,
a volunteer-powered production of Community Radio WFHB
in Bloomington, Indiana.
Available for download and podcast at news.wfhb.org.
Eco Report is your independent, ecologically inspired news source
for South Central Indiana,
bringing you news that the Earth wants you to hear.
Send your comments, suggestions, and story ideas
directly to the Eco Report staff.
The email address is
earth@wfhb.org.
That's earth@wfhb.org.